I say two views, but there are rarely situations where it isn't possible to have more than two views. And it's possible sometimes to think up a third view, which in some ways, on consideration, appears more satisfactory to both sides than their own prearranged expectation what to do. And it's the business of the meeting to wait for that. And I may say it's the business of any experienced friend, including the clerk, to use his ingenuity to find a way of dealing with an impasse of this sort. The clerk doesn't have to do it. There are often other people in the meeting that are just as anxious to arrive at. They all have come with the intention of arriving at a joint decision, satisfactory joint decision. Therefore, anybody might think of an appropriate answer. But there's one thing they won't do, and that is to drive ahead with one decision over against another, over any substantial minority. Because, as I've said, experience teaches that that's not a very satisfactory decision. It may lead to worse breaches in the group, and the unity of the group is important. There are various devices that can be used in these situations, old-fashioned devices, and then some new ideas for a given problem. One suggestion is that, and can be made if you get into this impasse, that in the light of these differences, well expressed by a number of people, that a small committee be appointed, representing both points of view, to thrash the matter out in a smaller group, see if they can come to some decision. And that committee meets in the same spirit, but a smaller group, takes more time without taking the time of the whole group, and sometimes comes up with a solution that they've worked out. Another alternative, of course, is simply postpone it to the next meeting. Some of these meetings meet every month. The problems don't need immediate settlement always, and you can afford to wait. If it's a matter of property, for instance, whether you'll buy a new piece of ground or build an addition to the schoolhouse or buy a new carpet for the meeting house floor or seats for the benches. These are the kind of questions. I may say that questions like this can be quite as emotional as other questions. Perhaps the fact they are so secular tends to take us away from the spirit of spiritual cooperation.
In these meetings, do they ever discuss, well, for instance, the Quaker's viewpoint on testing and things like that?
Quaker viewpoint on?
On bomb testing.
Yes, they discuss
those things also?
Quite natural that a member of the meeting would come in and say, for instance, I think our monthly meeting ought to write a letter to President Kennedy or Mr. Khrushchev or to some other group of people protesting against the continued bomb testing. Well, there might be a difference of opinion about that. Some people would say this is not the right people to address, this is not the right time to bring it forward. There might be people that say, well, the government knows best and it won't bomb test, it can avoid it, and we care. Who are we, private citizens, to say anything about it? You get all those things. Well, now that's a difficult problem. There are some quite sincere people that don't feel that this is the right thing for the meeting as so to do. If the letter's to go, it's to be signed in the name of the meeting. And they don't want their monthly meeting, their group of friends, to be misrepresented. Yes? Yes?
What happens in the case of, I noticed in the readings it says that the expression of your revelation is tempered by the group opinion. In other words, if Naylor were to erupt today, he would have to do so realizing that his that everything he said would be tempered by the members of his meeting, like what they thought. How is this done? Is this done?
You mean what effect has that on the individual?
I want to know how this process takes place. I mean, how does the existence of the community, the friends meeting, temper a person's views and the expression of his views?
I don't know that it tempers their views. I've seen cases where I thought the views were quite intemperate on all sides. But belonging to this group and loyal to the group, that I think you must take for granted. And wishing the group not to be split wide open by an unnecessary conflict, that does at once. A man can say with the utmost conviction, now I feel quite sure that this is what we ought to do. But at the same time, other people are speaking with equal conviction, and I don't think being outvoted helps very much in another meeting. I happen to be at a meeting, quite a large meeting, I guess 1,000 people, some time ago, when a very much respected older man got up and said, it's quite evident from what's been said that there are two completely different views on this subject in this meeting. But he said, we've come here not to make one view prevail or another, but to find what we can agree on. I also remember an even larger group, an international group of friends, 1,000 friends, meeting in Oxford a few years ago. And the matter, I think, was a matter of the difference between friends that had a very capitalistic view and friends that had something in other point of view, which you can imagine. And they had a rather heated discussion. And I forget just what the matter was, whether we adopt this report or this minute or something. And an elderly friend got up and said in prayer, Lord, we're in a fix. Help us out. Had an interesting effect on the group. It didn't immediately produce from heaven a formula, you can understand that. But it did remind the group of the situation, I mean the spiritual situation they were in. So that's the way it worked. And you'll be surprised, unless you've attended these meetings or attended similar meetings, how often a suggested solution that nobody had thought of when they came into the meeting or when the debate began occurs to the meeting and is approved by the meeting. And is the decision of the meeting. It's a very, I think I, you know the geography up here at the meeting house, probably, at Haverford. Some years ago, that little graveyard, you remember, was all filled with graves. And the members of that monthly meeting were raising the question of whether they oughtn't to enlarge the graveyard, take a little, move the fence, you know, and take a little more land in. Well, there's an awfully emotional situation. People have their relatives buried in that ground, and the members of the meeting wanted to be buried with them, and there wasn't any room. And on the other hand, the proposal made was that the way to enlarge the ground would be to take a piece off the ground where the children of the local school were playing. You know, and it's very important for them to have some room at recess. So here you have the claims of the dead versus the claims of the living, you see. And I think you can see that there would be quite a difference of opinion. The first time it was brought up in the local monthly meeting there, they didn't get anywhere. But people did get ideas off their chest, and that's getting somewhere, I suppose. And they decided to postpone the matter. It didn't have to be done this month. I wasn't here, but I understand that it was 6 months later that the meeting made a decision. The decision was, somebody had been looking around, and the decision was that they would buy a piece of property adjacent and extend the playground that direction and take a bit of the present playground and put it into the graveyard. Well, when you look at it, wasn't that a satisfactory solution? Same graveyard, and meanwhile, I think they'd also bought a piece of ground not in that area at all, or in a graveyard, or a separate ground for a graveyard. So the people in the future, not particularly connected with the people already buried there, could find a nice new graveyard for their burial.